This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts in what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Today's show is How to Have a Fulfilling Sex Life After 50. While cake is good without icing, sex is the icing on the cake that makes intimate relationships especially sweet. The large amount of humor about sex in our society is a good indication of how important sex is to us and how much anxiety we have about it. It takes more than a little blue pill to have a fulfilling sex life. Psychologist Dr. Robert Birch has more than 30 years of experience working with men, women, and couples on sexual concerns. Although retired from clinical practice, he still writes extensively on how to have a more fulfilling sex life. Dr. Birch, I'm delighted to have you with us.
Well, I'm happy to be with you, Dr. Bricky. It's good touching base again with you.
What is the biggest problem that men over 50 have with sex?
Well, I think the biggest psychological problem is that they are confused because things are now beginning to change. It's somewhere between 45 and 55. Most men will say, uh-oh, something is different. And a lot of men, they just don't know how to handle that because we get spoiled. As young men, we respond rapidly, respond frequently, but as we age, things begin to change. And so the psychological part of it is men are caught by surprise. They don't know what to do. The physical part, though, then, is that by now, we're probably clogging our arteries. That's impacting the ability to become physically aroused. You know, biologically, we're changing.
So were you saying that psychologically, they're just spooked and at a loss and often psych themselves out of sex?
Well, we don't talk that openly about sex in the later years.
Mm-hmm.
And so younger men, they're simply assuming that this is the way it's going to be. My colleague there in Columbus, Cynthia Ruberg, she often said that for men particularly, sex is like playing baseball. You come up the bat, you hit the ball, and you expect to score a home run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the problem is that when men start striking out or only hitting doubles, you know, they don't know what to do. And a lot of men at that point will back off. They figure if they cannot succeed, they're not going to try.
So you get the I'm too tired tonight and try to gracefully avoid it.
Right, because of the fear if I start something I can't finish, it'll be embarrassing.
So I'll save myself for a night when I'm especially rested and especially strong and have just done 20 push-ups.
Yeah, when I'm feeling really, really lucky, you know, then maybe, yeah, but.
So what do you counsel them to do to know what to make of the change?
Let me just kind of go back, because we want to talk not only to aging males at this point and aging couples at this point, but the younger couples also, because it's during those early years that we can begin learning what will make it good for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that couples need to learn early in their relationship is to start from scratch, to say, let's play. You know, let's not worry about the outcome. Let's not worry about orgasms, completion. There's no goal. Let's play and experience the process. That needs to be learned early, and that is going to work for a lifetime. So early on, men and women need to abandon this concept of failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no failure if you're making love. And if you want to make babies, you might fail. But if you're making love, my golly, there's no failure. So it's the development of what has been called a fail-safe concept of sexuality.
I really like the idea that it's all play and lots of different kinds of play.
Well, that way, there's no failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you play and you have fun, you know, there's no failure there. But another thing that the younger couple needs to begin working on is the creation of novelty. You can get into ruts. You can get boring. A lot of young people say, nah, what are you talking about, boring? But over the years, same routine, it can get boring. So early on, accepting creativity as a goal, looking for ways to add novelty, that can keep things alive.
See, I thought you were a sex therapist, and now I find out you're a play therapist.
Oh, yes. To me, you know, sex has to be play, particularly with the aging couple. And also, you know, very early, couples need to learn to talk positively about their sexuality, talk positively about their desires and their fantasies, and in positive ways, tell your partner what you like. And you'll understand this, being a psychologist, there's a difference between you language and I language.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when you touch me that way, as opposed to, you never touch me right. I like it when we do this, not, you always decide what to do and I never like it. So talking positively about desires, that's important.
And by positive language, you mean putting it in the positive and not being critical.
Right, yeah, because if you kind of say, you never do it right, it's like shaking your finger and yes, being critical, yeah. So, and it's also important very early to understand that sexuality, to be good for a lifetime, has to become a sensual experience. When we think of sex, we're thinking pretty mechanically, but when we start thinking sensual, then we're talking about the use of all the senses. Touch, there's the sight, looking at each other even, just and saying nice things. The auditory, listening to each other's sounds. Make nice sounds if we open up and listen to those sounds. Smelling the partner's skin, smelling the wonderful aromas that are created. Yes, there's all kinds of aromas and taste, and all the senses need to become involved, not just the mechanical part of intercourse.
For the partners who are in a rut, how do you get them to be more sensual and playful?
Sex therapy, our technique, is what's called sensate focus. It goes way mm-hmm. back to Masters and Johnson. Sensate focus. The focus is on sensations. We would tell a couple, hey, intercourse is off limits. You're not allowed to have intercourse. And in fact, we will start out, you are not allowed to touch each other's genitals. Begin with sensual massage. Get in touch with the sensuality of the experience. Because just as soon as you rush into intercourse, then you're too focused. You're too goal-oriented. And it's the goal orientation that will create performance anxiety, that will lead to that feeling of failure. And so, sensate focus. Focus in on the sensations. Yeah, good for a lifetime.
So already that's going to help both partners, quote, perform better because they're more relaxed and less anxious.
And that's the paradox. The less focused you are on getting the job done, the more likely it is you're going to get it done.
That's back to play.
And if you don't get it done, with the fail-safe concept, it's not a failure. You know, it's a no-win kind of situation.
You had fun anyway.
I mean, no win. That's not the... it's no loss. Okay.
Win-win, no loss. Yes.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you've got the couples playful and sensual and they're still having difficulty, particularly if a man's having difficulty getting a good erection, what do you do next?
Well, first of all, we have to talk about what does that mean to have a good erection. What makes an erection good? What makes it bad? And some men would just scratch their head and say, erection, I'll take any. But yeah, we're in aging bodies and things begin to change physically. But that does not preclude the possibility of playing. And so many couples quit because the man calls a halt to it because he's not becoming firm. He could still pleasure the woman. She could still give him pleasure, even though intercourse might not be possible. But people can still play.
And that's so contrary to the myth that we have of the man as the predator and always interested in sex, and the woman being traditionally more demure.
And, again, thinking back to my professional affiliation with Cynthia Ruberg there in Westerville, she used to always say, that sex for men is about sex. Sex for women is about the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been kind of confirmed through a lot of study, a lot of research, a lot of interviews, that women value the relationship aspect, the intimacy aspect of a sexual encounter, where men are more focused on running the bases. They're more focused on the goal.
As men's testosterone levels get a little lower, do we start seeing a shift in that, where they start getting more interested in relationship and intimacy?
Only if they have developed that over the years. But if they have always been goal-oriented in bed, when things start to change, they're more likely just to back off. And so that's why I say it's important for the younger couples to begin appreciating all the sensual aspects of an intimate relationship. And then when the physical part starts changing, you still have that.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old story that's too long to tell in detail, so I'll abbreviate it. But a couple loved to travel, and every time they traveled, they'd end up in California. Eventually, they were no longer making it to California, but they began to appreciate those locations where they were running out of gas. And when they came back, their friends would ask, "How was your trip?" And they would say, "It was fantastic, because we love traveling together." The emphasis was no longer on getting to California. They had discovered the value of traveling together. And once a couple knows that, then they can continue to play, and the more often they play, the more likely it is that there will be some sense of success. It may not be perfect, but, you know, you get your head out of the way, you get into the process, and things are going to start happening a little bit. Not perfect. And that's the other myth. You know, the one myth is that we're over the hill by the time we're 60. The other myth is that, you know, we're going to be rock hard and ready to go for the rest of our lives. That's a myth also. Things do change. And it's not just the drop in testosterone. It's the clogging of the arteries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that begins to mechanically slow down the flow of blood into the tissue that has to become erect, that has to swell up and firm up. And that's true for both men and women. It's called vasocongestion, the swelling of the veins and the spongy tissue. Women need that also.
And that's the mechanism that Viagra operates on, is helping getting more blood flow. And
yeah. And
you have to have the desire. If you don't have the desire, the Viagra isn't going to work.
Correct. Yeah. And you have to have a responsive partner. Yeah, it has to start with desire. And Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, they're all very good medications. And men should be comfortable asking their doctors if they are in good enough health to use one of those. It's going to put the man at some risk. Sex is good, but it's not worth dying for. but most men, they age. If they still have the desire and if they have a willing partner, they ought to be talking to their doctors, just as women should be talking to their doctors about their hormone levels.
Mm-hmm.
Because women are much more receptive to hormonal changes than our men. Women need to talk to doctors about their hormones.
In your experience, which kind of doctors get the female hormone issues the best and are most helpful with it?
Gynecologists. Yeah, so women should talk to their gynecologists about their hormones and their sexual concerns. Yeah.
We'll get back to Dr. Robert Birch in just a moment. Note how old you feel now. You will soon feel a lot younger after hearing Dr. Bricky. That's how I'm usually introduced when I give a keynote address. We are brainwashed with limiting beliefs about aging. As America's preeminent anti-aging psychologist, I bring good news for a change. A change in how you view aging, and I do it with a good helping of humor. In short, I help audiences learn the mental game for living longer, healthier, and happier. But I'm not satisfied with people just acquiring information and having a feel-good time. I have people adopt healthier beliefs on the spot and lock them in for lifelong benefits. I also like to stay and do breakout sessions, consulting, and individual coaching at no additional cost. When your organization or business needs a speaker, have them check out my demo video at anti-aging-speaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. And give me a call. My phone number is on all my websites. And now back to Dr. Birch. We focused a little on men. Are women usually pretty good at getting the sensual and the playful part?
Well, they are, as long as they're not worried that the guy is going to try to push further. So if a couple says, okay, we're going to set aside time, and this is important, we've got to set aside time, we're going to relax, we're going to create a romantic atmosphere, maybe candles, soft music, and we're going to play. The woman might say, sounds great to me, but if at some point she begins to feel that she's not responding, she needs to be able to say, let's just stay at this level of play because it's not going to work for me. Mm-hmm. And if she's afraid, the guy's going to say, that's what you think, baby. She's going to stop playing. So in that sensate focus concept, there has to be the freedom for the person who is not responding to be able to say, let's just kind of stop here. And that has to be okay. It has to be okay.
I would think that one of women's biggest fears is that the man isn't going to find me attractive anymore. Do you hear a lot of that?
Well, yeah, that body image problem, yeah. Sometimes it is a problem. And to be quite honest, it's more the man's problem. It's the woman's problem. You know, men have been conditioned to this ideal centerfold kind of image of how women should look. And bodies change. But, you know, the man has to be good at complimenting his partner. She may not look 21, but she might smell as good, and she might taste as good, and she might kiss as good as she did back, maybe even better than when she was 21. There are so many positive things that the man needs to focus on so he doesn't start focusing in on that little roll of fat and she's not worrying about it. But that's a problem with aging couples, yes. They're both men and women. We all get a little pudgy. Yeah.
What's especially nice about what you're saying is I'm hearing a set of skills that are very learnable. I'm giving compliments and focusing sensually and being playful.
Yeah.
It's not either you got it or you don't.
It's in a sense, it's not learning, it's relearning. Because
okay.
The first thing we learned was how to do it perfectly. And now we have to relearn that it's not going to be perfect, but it can still be pleasurable. Yeah, but studies have found that couples well into their 70s are still having sexual relationships.
Mm-hmm.
One study, recent study, showed that 24% of people over 76 were having sexual relationships more than twice a month. That's not the majority of people, but 24%. That's pretty impressive. More than twice a month.
And I don't know about the population, but if it included people who don't have access to partners, that's even more impressive.
Well, yeah. But, you know, there is the old saying, use it or lose it. An aging couple or an aging individual who has lost a partner and thinks they might just find another partner, if they've not been comfortable with masturbation, they probably should learn. Because any way you use it is going to help prevent losing it. And masturbation is a good way to fill in the gaps. And if couples are not in perfect sync, there is nothing wrong with the one who has the stronger desire filling in the gaps. You know, there needs to be a lot of permission when it comes to sexuality. We've had so many restrictions in the past. There needs to be permission. Permission to use an artificial lubricant. Permission to experiment with toys. Permission to exchange fantasies. No, in a relationship, in an intimate relationship, nobody should tell us that we can't do this or we can't do that. You know, it's a relearning process.
This is a naive question, but do most women figure out masturbation on their own, or do a lot of women benefit from books or DVDs on masturbation? Different aspects of it they wouldn't have thought of.
I think it depends on the generation that we're talking about. I think younger women today are beginning to discover their bodies and learn about their bodies at a relatively early age. I think probably my parents, and I'm 73, my mother, in fact, you know, there's an old saying, well, my parents never had sex. My mother probably would not have dared touch herself. And she might be up in heaven right now saying, you silly boy. If only you knew. But, yeah, I think younger women are discovering on their own. There's a lot more information about it. So, yeah. And it's a good way for a woman to learn about her body, because men have been considered to be the sexperts in the past. In the past, women would say, okay, here's my body. You do what you need to do, because I don't understand what you need to do. You're the expert. Do it. Men don't know. Most men still believe that women should be reliably orgasmic during intercourse. The majority of women have never and will never reach orgasm during intercourse. But men don't know that. They think, I've got a good thing, I'll put it in her good thing, something good's going to happen.
I think the vast majority of men don't know that, and even an awful lot of women don't know that.
A lot of women don't know that.
Think there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, yeah. I've had women come in and say, I'm broken. You know, are you able to masturbate to orgasm? Sure. But it doesn't happen the right way. Yeah, well, no, it doesn't happen the right way. Because the right way isn't right.
We're talking with Dr. Robert Birch, who's been a pioneer in sex therapy and specialized in sex therapy for more than 30 years. He's the author of numerous books. I've counted more than a dozen. Some of them include his recent novel, Gray Pleasures, Sex in the Aging Male, and for women, Sensual Pathways to Pleasure. He also has poetry, even a mystery novel. Bob, I'm just amazed at how much you've written. And all of these are available through oralcaress.com, oralcaress.com. That's oralcaress.com. Do want to note that it's very explicit, so if that's something that you're not interested in, find another site. But there's just all kinds of books and DVDs and sexual toys and all kinds of information there. Anything more you want to say about any of the books you've written or the website, Bob?
Well, I'd just like to say that when I was in clinical practice, I wrote sexuality self-help books.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a clinical manual for sex therapists. So it was kind of professional. Now, I don't have to worry about being professional. So now, I am more comfortable writing erotic romance novels. Erotic romance. They've got to be explicit, but they have to be romantic, and they have to involve a monogamous couple that lives happily ever after. Yeah, so I'm still expressing my interest in sexuality, in playful sexuality, in open sexuality, but in a different genre now. My website, as you say, has some explicit content. It also has a lot of free articles that are educational. It invites people to email me for free advice and information, and I guarantee the lowest prices on the internet. I'm not doing this to make money. I'm doing it to provide information.
Bottom line is, the older you get, the more playful you get, Bob.
I think that's gotta work, yeah. Sex ought to be good for a lifetime, as long as we don't stick to the old definition. You know, our sexuality is much more than just intercourse. Yeah, good for a lifetime.
For men that are single and they're not, quote, performing well, they haven't had relationships with a particular woman yet, how might they approach that whole issue with them? I mean, would you discuss it first, or would you just be playful?
Well, Masters and Johnson identified what they called the widower syndrome. Man is sexually active with his wife, he loses his wife, now he's a widower, and he's thinking, well, I'll never be with another woman again. And then a woman comes along, and by golly, she is interested, and the man panics because he thought it's never going to happen again. Men who have that gap in relationships, particularly if they're aging, they have to be willing to talk honestly with the partner that says, yeah, you know, I'm interested. The man or the woman needs to say, now, wait a minute. Now, let's talk about my age. Let's talk about the kinds of problems I've been experiencing. Let's redefine where we're going to start. And as long as you're willing to start from scratch and see what happens, I'm in. Yeah. The man later in years, he can't come on to an older woman promising to razzle-dazzle her with his expert performance, because there's a good chance it's not going to happen.
Well, it might even have an appeal in that a lot of women like a project.
There we go. Yeah, let's see what I can build. Yeah.
We think we're very knowledgeable about venereal diseases. Are you seeing people really miss certain things on venereal disease or making big mistakes besides people who are just outright stupid?
Well, anymore, people do need to be cautious. And I think probably most of the time, if we don't rush into a relationship, we can determine whether or not someone is trustworthy. And that needs to be talked about, too. That's one of the things that needs to be talked about. And then, you know, there's a better chance that you can go unprotected. But, you know, men who are picking up women in bars, men who are picking up, or women who are, you know, picking up guys in bars, that is very, very risky. Because the more people you've been with, the more likelihood that you've picked something up. Someone once said, when you go to bed with someone, you are really going to bed with everyone they have slept with over the past 7 years.
You just took the fun out of the party, Bob.
Well, see, and that's something else. That, you know, if someone is single and they're wanting to get started again, that's something they need to learn about. The use of condoms. How do you put on a condom? You know, a lot of men pull it on tight. No, you know, there's a way to put on a condom. They need to learn about condoms. Not for birth control anymore with the aging couple, but, you know, for prevention of venereal disease. Yeah.
And if they're not sure, there are videos that will literally show you how to put on a condom.
There are. Yep.
Well, I'm going to ask a few more dumb questions.
There are no dumb questions.
Do any aphrodisiacs help?
Oh, not that I know of. No. No. Someone once said that novelty is the strongest aphrodisiac. And that's why it said back that it's good for couples to learn to be creative, to bring novelty into their relationships, and see the value of novelty. No, in terms of popping some sort of pill, no, there are none. You know, a woman might say being in love is her biggest aphrodisiac.
Mm-hmm. What about men's anxiety about size?
Oh, my. Wow. Well, the interesting thing is that in my clinical practice, I saw more women complaining about something being too big than about it being too small. Because the old thing, you know, it doesn't matter the size of the tool, it's how you use it. And, you know, there's a lot to that. On my website, I have a free article on positions of intercourse that will compensate for size concerns and will more likely help a woman reach orgasm, because there are certain positions in which clitoral stimulation is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But the old standard missionary position, where men like to get on top, they like to be down low, so they're making a straight shot, and they're missing the clitoris. And when it's all over, the woman says, is that all there is? Yeah, and that has nothing to do with size. That has to do with technique. I would You know, tell men who are concerned about size, be thankful you're not too big, because that is a bigger problem, both longer and thicker. Some women, they just, you know, it hurts. But on the other hand, vaginas come in different sizes also. So sometimes it's a matter of compatibility.
How often do you see fetishes causing problems in a relationship?
Well, it depends on what the fetish is. And it depends on whether or not the partner can become involved in that kinky behavior. Now, there are times when it adds to the relationship, but at other times it can totally destroy a relationship, because a lot of fetishes are so ingrained that even though the marriage is threatened, the person with the fetish cannot let it go. So it can be a big problem. But other times it can just be kinky fun. There are a lot of people discover that, you know, playful bondage, you know, not tightly bound up, playful bondage can be fun. Light, very light, gentle spanking, you know, that can be fun. And if the couple can find a way to build it in a way that is not disgusting or painful or degrading, it might just add something. But there are some of the darn things are illegal. You know, the exhibitionists, the voyeurists, you know, that's illegal. That's going to get in the way. You know, heavy sadomasochism. If the partner isn't into it, that's going to get in the way. There are couples who are committed to a swingers lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, swinging is a positive aspect of their relationship. For others, you know, it's the sure way to break things up. It all depends.
We'll get back to Dr. Birch in just a moment. Living longer, healthier, and happier requires being very clear about who you are, what you want, and how to achieve it. Historically, psychologists have focused on fixing what's wrong with you. With more than 30 years of clinical experience, I'm very good at fixing problems. But what I enjoy most is helping successful people be even more successful and even healthier. Just as athletes use coaches to achieve their full potential, coaching can help you achieve your full potential. If you have goals you're having difficulty achieving, or you're interested in life makeover coaching to develop a comprehensive plan for your life, give me a call and I'll see if I can get you on my coaching schedule. The phone number is on all my websites. And further information about my coaching is at drbricky.com. That's drbricky.com. And now back to Dr. Birch. In your counseling experience, is it that it never works very well for one person to secretly be having an affair, but if couples are mutually consenting to seeing other people or multiple relationships or something, it might work?
Well, let's say it's more likely to work. If someone is sneaking off and having an affair, number one, the trust has been broken. Trust is absolutely essential in a long-term relationship. Break the trust, it is very hard to get back. So someone who's having an affair has broken the trust. Someone who is having an affair is going to stir up jealousy. But for couples that swing and make it work, those that can make it work, they're in the same room. They already know their rules. They have guidelines, and they stay within those guidelines. And they, you know, they don't meet the other person outside of the threesome or the foursome or the moresome. It's all in one place. And that means that there's no violation of trust. There's no secrecy, and that might work for some couples.
That's fascinating.
And at times, I have seen couples that were into swinging, and one of them falls in love with someone outside the marriage, and that's it. I mean, that just, that's big trouble.
I'm fascinated that these swinging couples have rules that they follow faithfully and that it's very much about trust in order to make those work.
Yes, and in fact, on my website, I have rules for swingers. There's a free article, lays out the rules. Yeah, because there's got to be trust. There has to be openness. honesty, and probably most couples over time are going to close their marriage. Years and years and years ago, someone wrote a book titled Open Marriage.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote the book, they advocated open marriage, said it will work. They ended up closing their marriage. They couldn't make it work.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they ended up divorcing.
Well, there were rumors of that also, but I don't know. One way or another, they found that it didn't work. Yeah. I think the O'Neills, but Open Marriage was the title of the book 30 years ago.
You mentioned Masters and Johnson several times. I think that was back in the 60s. How has sex therapy changed over the years?
There's much more of a medical involvement today.
I mean, they're going to hook you up to machinery more?
Well, a lot of psychiatrists, a lot of gynecologists, a lot of urologists are becoming involved in the, quote, sexual sciences. So there's much more emphasis on the physical or the biological aspect. But some of the basic kinds of techniques introduced by Masters and Johnson are still being used. For rapid ejaculators, for example. I mean, they've been called premature ejaculators, but I always call them rapid ejaculators. You know, it's still basically the old techniques that have been used for years and years. So the behavioral aspects of it have not changed that much. But then what's being added are all these medical perspectives and attempts to intervene and treat with medication rather than psychotherapy.
From your perspective, it's probably usually more psychological than it is medical, and we're drifting a little too much in the medicalization direction?
Oh, that is debatable, and I think it'll be debated for the next 20 years. You know, I'm sure that I attempted to behaviorally treat problems of erectile dysfunction, impotence it used to be called, mm-hmm. but erectile dysfunction. I'm sure I tried to treat a lot of cases in sex therapy when, in fact, it was a physical problem. And all they needed to do was go and, you know, as soon as Viagra came along, the number of cases dropped rapidly.
Well,
because, you know, it could be treated medically.
At the time, you used the tools that were available.
That's right. Didn't know any better.
Now, one of your book titles is a short story about lasting longer.
Yes, that's for rapid ejaculators, yeah.
What kind of advice do you give in that book?
Well, we have to start with the assumption that a lot of rapid ejaculators lose track of where they are as they climb that ladder toward the point of no return. They get caught up in it, and suddenly it's an, oh, darn it, and they're over the hill. Or over the brink, not over the hill, but over the brink. And, you know, by then it's too late. So it's important to go back to that sensate focus notion, to put intercourse off limits, and have the partner, and it always works best if this partner, stimulate manually so that the man can relax and pay attention to where he is in that progression toward the point of no return. But there are two other things. Rapid ejaculators very often are people who have high levels of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we got to work on their relaxation, got to help them relax, get things calmed down. And the other thing is that a lot of times rapid ejaculators have not been having sex very frequently. And so they're on the brink. I mean, they're all set to go. They've been waiting for 2 weeks, and then suddenly here's the opportunity. And whoa, particularly with a new partner, you know, that novelty of a new partner, wow. Any man who's not sure of his endurance with a new partner, he's got to be extra careful. In my books for rapid ejaculators, and I think different from a lot of the other books on the subject, I talk about the best position for the couple to engage in intercourse. Because I'm convinced that for a man particularly, part of the stimulation that pushes us along are those proprioceptives, those internal feelings of our pelvis thrusting. So if we are aware of the pelvic thrusts along with the stimulation within our penis, those things combine. So we take away the thrusting. An active male is more likely to ejaculate rapidly. Let's get him on his back, let's get him relaxed, and let's put his partner on top. We know that long thrusting is going to hurry a man along. Let's put the woman on top, have her stay in close. And let's add something to that. Let's have her stay in close, lean forward, and slide not up and down, but back and forth. As she's doing that, she is minimizing the stimulation of the man, for the man, but she is maximizing her clitoral stimulation because she now is in contact with the base of his penis, and as she slides, she's sliding up a little bit and then back down, and she's getting good clitoral stimulation. So now we've got a man who's going to last longer, and we've increased the likelihood that the woman is going to orgasm during intercourse. And I think my books are unique in that regard.
I don't remember reading or hearing about that anywhere else. And she's probably going to do a fair amount of stopping and starting to also help him develop more control.
Well, that was the old approach in the beginning, the stop. Well, no, the first approach was called the squeeze technique, where when the man was getting close, the woman would stop the stimulation and squeeze her thumb behind the head of the penis and squeeze the head of the penis. Well, finally, sex therapist said, hey, it's not the squeeze, it's the stopping and starting. But that whole start-stop procedure is to help the man really learn how to keep track and to know when he's getting close, because it's his obligation to say stop. So he's got to pay attention. And and knowing where he is going to help. And being relaxed and maybe filling in the gaps with masturbation if the partner's not as has a lower level of desire, but you know, to keep the that level down a little bit. So and some men are always going to be fast. Some men seem to be born with control.
Bob, it's fascinating talking with you. We're talking with Dr. Robert Birch, a pioneer in sex therapy, done sex therapy for more than 30 years, and then went on to write more than a dozen books, including poetry and manuals for therapists and how-to books for men and women, and even poetry and erotic novels. Some of the books include Sex and the Aging Male, Essential Pathways to Pleasure, and the erotic novel Gray Pleasures. Bob, what are you, about an hour from Columbus, Ohio?
I'm now up in the Mount Vernon area, up in Knox County, about an hour and 15 minutes,
And retired from clinical practice, but still very active in research and advising and writing. The website is oralcaress.com. That's oralcaress.com, oralcaress.com. It is an explicit site that has not only his books, but also DVDs and sex toys and the email address where you can ask Bob questions for his advice. And great pleasure talking with you again.
It is good touching base with you, Michael.
Commentary. Talking with Dr. Birch is like talking with an artist who loves his work. It's like a cook who loves to cook. Artists and cooks don't retire. They love their art. They love their food. Why would they do something else when they love it so much? In short, talking with Dr. Birch is like talking with a Robert Frost or a Julia Child. Most sex therapists focus on technique. I love the way Dr. Birch emphasizes an outlook and an attitude. His biggest emphasis is on sex as play, and the spices are creativity and adventure. His metaphor is enjoying the trip, whether you get to the destination or not. It's sex that truly lasts a lifetime. Some of the keys were focusing on the sensual as opposed to performance and talking positively. For example, I love it when you do that, as opposed to, why don't you ever? I found it fascinating that in his 30 years of research and clinical experience, he finds a lot of middle-aged men avoiding sex for fear they won't perform well. The shift in the mindset to a playful trip means that men don't have to worry about getting graded, and women don't have to worry about it either. I'm also fascinated to learn that swingers have very clear roles. And I was fascinated to learn that most people in open marriages eventually end up closing the relationship, that is, making it exclusive or getting a divorce. Why? Sex and relationships require trust, and it's hard to have trust without rules and boundaries. Of course, Dr. Birch's first rule, and his second and third and fourth rule, is play, have fun, enjoy the trip. Emails. Love getting those emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Last week's show on selecting nursing homes drew a number of emails about horror stories. Surprise, surprise. And some kudos for how cool Medicare.gov and specifically Medicare.gov/NHCompare is. The NH stands for nursing home, so it's /nursing home compare. That's the site that allows you to put in your zip code or your county, and it will give you just enormous amounts of comparison information on all the nursing homes in your area, and even rates them on a 1-to-5-star rating system. One sleuth suggestion from a listener is to catch visiting family members and ask them what they like and don't like about the facility. Another tip was to note whether the facility has a new wing or parts that have been remodeled and request to be in that new wing. One facility I visit, for example, has flat-screen TVs with speakers next to the beds, so you don't have dueling TVs drowning each other out, but have the sound close to your ears. And, of course, a better quality television set. Yet another suggestion is that some facilities have a mix of private and double occupancy rooms for the skilled nursing home clients, not the ongoing or custodial clients, and they don't charge extra for the private room. As I said, some do, some don't. You can shop around, but it's worth asking about. I'd love to hear your email comments on the show with Dr. Birch, or next week's show in which I interview a top cardiologist and a top cardiopsychologist who are the authors of the No Bull book on heart disease, which says it all, very practical advice on how to prevent heart disease and how to deal with it if you have it. So send those emails to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. A reminder, if you'd like to get my free email newsletter, the Defy Aging newsletter, you can go to drbricky.com, drbricky.com, or to my portal site, notaging.com, which can direct you to information about my award-winning books, Defy Aging and 52 Baby Steps to Grow Young, my anti-aging hypnosis CDs, my professional speaking services, and my coaching services. Until next week, this is your anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, thanking you for joining us on our journey to live longer, healthier, and happier.